Hello and welcome to this edition of the Four Wide Salute podcast. I am TJ Lane along with Brandon Stegall.
Hey, everybody.
On today's podcast, we're going to talk about what can short track promoters do to enhance the fan experience.
And I got to tell you, TJ, this is the one I wanted to do since I saw it come up on 4M. And it started with an article from Inside Circle Track who prompted the question, what can promoters do to improve the fan experience? And they had, different guys talking about dirt, pavement. They had someone in from the Atlanta Motor Speedway. But then I wanted us to talk about, in terms of a dirt track, because that's how 4M basically took off. As everybody knows, 4M is the big dirt late model forum. And they, everybody chimed in with, their ideas. And I thought, what better topic could we discuss than with a former track promoter and track operator?
Yes. So this is something that I'm looking forward to too, because I've been out of the track promoting game for 3 or 4 years now. So it's something as you get away from it, you're just solely a fan now, that you kind of think back and look back and say, hey, what could I have done to make things better? So I'll go ahead and start with this and say my very first thing that I admit that I would have done is to put a lot more focus on making the shows more timely. I think that's the number one thing that you can do to make the fan experience better is, try to limit the downtime by as much as you can, because it's just a fact. It's the way that today's generation is. People don't want to sit there all night. They want to, see a show probably no more than three hours, three, 4 hours. And, I think that's a major key right there.
I think that was probably the number one topic, or the thing brought up rather, was run a timely show, and people would kind of diverge into different areas on how to do that. People would mention you shouldn't be running six support classes, or more generally limit the support classes. Don't take any intermissions. And the biggest is probably the start on time. Because a lot of tracks, they don't get started on time. They're 15, 20 minutes late, or they're waiting around for the sun to set instead of starting at 6:30 like they said they were going to, and then your whole night's off.
That's one thing I learned from the legendary flagman Bob Smith. We were very fortunate to have him as our flagman out there at Southern. And If it was a night that we were 15 minutes late, getting the track ran in, he would always look at me and he'd say, TJ, now those 15 minutes that you guys took taking that track to get it ran in and get it ready, so that's 15 minutes that we've lost for the entire night, and we can't get those 15 minutes back. That's something that he preached to me, and it's so very true. When you start a show late, that's time that you can never get back, and it just seems like it kind of free falls from there.
Yeah, and I want to, give the promoters kind of a chance to defend themselves too, though, and talk to the promoter in you, because, you mentioned that you took 15 minutes to roll the track in because, you're trying to have a good racy surface for that night. And then I know at one time at Rocky Top, I was there, and the late models had been called to staging for their feature 3 or 4 times, and it took 15, 20 minutes for the first late model to ever come to staging.
As far as it goes with getting started on time, one of the things that can make a huge difference is a change in the weather conditions. So for us, if it took us 15 minutes longer to get the track rolled in that night, usually what the reason was is that after you put that last load of water on, it could be a day that's sunny, and it seems like that the track's almost drying up just as fast as you can put the water down. But what can happen is, you're used to dealing with those conditions for the whole day. Then you go out that last load of water that you've got scheduled to put on. You go and you dump the track with water. And then as soon as you pull off the track with the water truck, then clouds roll in and it gets overcast. And what happens when it gets overcast? That makes the moisture stay there. So, you were preparing for it to stay sunny, and to dry it faster, but then it gets cloud cover and it doesn't. And we had that happen to us a show one time in the early spring in 2013 at Southern. It's a day just like that. So we go out, dump a lot of water on the track there, the last load there, and then it gets overcast, and it took us a half hour to get to get it rolled in.
And it's those kind of things that you can't win, because, you know, if you ended up with a dry track, then you know you're going to get massacred on the message boards and on social media with dust or, you know, one groove or what have you.
Yes, and one thing that you touched on too with the drivers, I think, you know, I don't want to put everything back on them. I don't want to sound like that I'm doing that, but I think it's important for the drivers to try to work with the tracks on getting lined up. You're almost begging the guys to come and bring the cars to staging. I mean, you know, I've had it to where I've even gone back in the pits to try to get them, you know, lined up. You've got all your pit officials lining them up. I've been at other tracks and I've seen the same thing. I've seen the track operator have to go in his golf cart and go and holler for cars to line up. So I think it's something that should be a group effort between the tracks and the drivers on that to try to comply with what the track procedures are. You know, because the tracks, the last thing a track wants to do is get nasty and make a guy start from the tail because, you know, he wasn't there on time. That's not what you want to do. You don't want to affect the show in that way. And just to bring up, you know, one more thing with that is with the race format, if you cut out time trials, that's, you know, just look at how much time that's going to save you throughout the night.
Yeah, and qualifying is becoming more and more common, you know, for a lot of the quote-unquote support classes, non-late model sprint car class, because of transponders and tracks having scoring loops. So you see less of the peel draw. But, you know, even if you combined hot laps and time trials, you're only putting three or four cars out on the track at a time. So you end up eating up, you know, quite a bit of time into the night when, you know, you could go directly into heat racing.
There was a race that I think both of us were at last April. I'm not going to name the track or anything. But we went there, and it was a 10,000 win late model race. And the racing was spectacular, had a great field of cars, was great racing. But by the time the feature hit the track, we had literally watched over 100 cars qualify, because they qualified every single class. And by that point, you're just so worn out from watching that, you almost even lose focus and interest on what's going on.
And I won't name the track, but I will say it's one of those quote-unquote Southern tracks. And anymore, if you want to know what a Southern track is, that usually has that Southern format where they qualify everything, and it's single car qualifying or two out of three, separate from hot laps. Anything below Florence, Kentucky, draw a line, and you're in the South.
Yes, yes, and you know, I was at I've been to a couple of asphalt short tracks, Ona Speedway in West Virginia, and then at the old Columbus Motor Speedway in Columbus, Ohio. And the first time that I had ever gone to those facilities, I was amazed because they advertised racing at 7 o'clock. So, you know, I get there, I think it's like the dirt tracks. Most dirt tracks will say, hey, racing at 7:30, hot laps at 6:30. So I go there at 7 o'clock, or actually I get there about 6:30, and there's nothing going on there. I'm thinking, well, that's weird. We're going to hot lap or qualify. And then it comes 7 o'clock, and you know what? That first heat race or feature race, depending on what format they run, is in staging. And at 7 o'clock sharp, that runs off the track. And that's all you have for the whole night is racing. And of course, you know, how they do that is they qualify and practice the cars at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which is not something you can do in dirt. But just that, not having to sit through qualifying, that made such a major impact on the show that you've seen. So, you know, by 10:30, you've got every single race in for the night.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of people's goal, is about 10 or 10:30. They want to be able to be headed home. I'll go ahead and I'll kind of bring up the next topic on the list. Is something that came up was lower admission prices, either for a weekly show or for shows that aren't running a super late model class or a 410 sprint class, and some of the, you know, late model Lucas Oil late model shows where your standard price is kind of $30 and some tracks will charge 35 or 40. You know, why are we not charging lower admission prices?
That's a question that gets brought up a lot, and I've had people tell me, they say, you know what, TJ, if you guys would have just charged, if you would just charge $5 to get in every week, you're going to have those stands packed. Now, what they don't realize is at $5 a head, when you were charging $12, you're going to have to get over double the crowd in there every week just to get to where you were at as far as what your revenue is on the ticket sales. And my only concern with that as a promoter, and it's why that we never did it, is I don't think that the interest is there for every week. If you would do that to sustain it, it might do good the first few weeks, but I think it's like anything else, that the novelty of it kind of wears off, and it's the same thing. So, you know, I think at the end you may have a few more people, but not enough to make up that difference. And I think to prove that point, it's something that all the local tracks have started doing. They've done it for years, is have a $5 fan night. And, you know, I'm there at those races, and used to it was standing room only. And now at any track that I've been to that does it, the $5 night's not all that much more than more of a crowd than what they would get on a regular $12 night. And just to, you know, just to go with that point, I feel like with today's economy, I think, I think $12 to get in for a full night of entertainment that you get with the short track race, and I think that's as good of a deal as you're going to find. I think maybe what tracks need to look at is family friendly pricing to let kids in free.
And you mentioned the kids, and that's another thing that came up is, you know, two or three, you know, comments were, how about playgrounds for the kids? And how about, you know, someone's idea was, how about having a arcade room? Almost, you know, I'm thinking like almost like a bowling alley, how you have a separate arcade room and something. If you could have some kind of building and have some arcade set up so that the kids have something to do during the races and, you know, enjoy one another's company if they're not into racing so much.
I think that's something that's definitely going to have to be looked at moving forward is trying to add other stuff to these shows besides just the races, besides just the races itself. If you go to NASCAR races, these things are a big event. It's almost like going to a festival or a fair. I mean, you've got Ferris wheels, you've got I've seen bullfighting going on. That's what they had there at the NASCAR race a couple weeks ago. You know, you've got all the vendors with stuff. You've got concerts going on. You've got Monster Energy doing their show. You just have a whole lot of different activities going. You've got drivers' appearances. So, you know, you can get to a NASCAR Cup race 5 hours before the green flag, and, I mean, you are entertained with stuff going on all the way up to that green flag time. So, I mean, I know that dirt tracks, you know, you can't afford to have all that glitz and glamour like they have with NASCAR, but, you know, there's little things you can do. Those are great ideas that you had with some type of arcade, or, you know, you can bring local bands in to do concerts. You can have games going on throughout the night that get the fans engaged. I mean, there's just you can have cornhole tournaments. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that you can do there to try to help that fan experience, I think.
I absolutely agree. I feel like some of that is tried for some of our bigger dirt events. However, if you could take it to a weekly level, some of those sound like they should be fairly doable with a local band or cornhole tournaments. You know, that could be something that you could do, you know, once or twice during a year, some of those type of events, even for your weekly program.
Yes, and I think it goes with asking vendors to come in, because I think you would have a lot of local businesses that would want to come in there, and you could maybe even charge them to set up, but if anything, you know, don't charge them nothing, and they're going to be willing to do it, and have the freebies to give away, and have just different stuff going on. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff you can do that doesn't cost a lot of money that can go quite a long ways with the fans.
And to go ahead and kind of turn to the next topic on the list I wanted to ask you about is more than one person said, cut the support classes down. Don't be running eight classes. Don't be running six classes. From a promoter standpoint, why would a promoter want to have that many classes to start with?
You want to have that many classes because you want to get as many cars in the pits. And the reason you want all those cars in the pits is you have to have that backgate money. And what backgate money is that's all the people that come with those race cars. And you'd be surprised. It's your support classes that bring all those people in. And on the pit side, you know, you're getting double the money for what you're getting from a general admission ticket. And you know, I used to not think maybe that played as big of a part as what it does in the economics for the track. But you know, as with Southern, you know, that's one thing we experienced was our support classes just really dropped down in car numbers. So what happened, you know, we weren't getting the number of cars in the pits, which means we weren't selling the number of pit passes, and that difference there, it made a huge impact on how many general admission tickets that we needed to sell to, you know, to break even on the show. So, you know, I mean, we saw ourselves having to probably sell, you know, 33% more, general admission tickets to, just to break even. And and that really put a lot of stress there to where it almost made it next to impossible to get the numbers that we needed on the weekly programs to keep them going.
Where do you think that balance ends up being? Because you've got to be able to keep the fans on the, you know, the general admission side, if you will, happy, and not just the pit side. You know, is that maybe where we start cutting qualifying on at least some of the classes? And how do we balance that with the drivers and teams that are coming in and putting on the show?
I think that's exactly what we need to do is look out at is look at cutting out the qualifying. I mean, I think definitely for support classes, and I think even for the main classes, you may need to look at doing that, because it's just a proven fact that some of these other formats with peel draw or passing points, it just creates better action, especially at the weekly level where you don't have as close a competition levels as what you have at some of the national level events. So, I mean, I think that's a way to get it done. And I think another way to get it done is just how you do your schedule of events for the night. You know, I think you make it to where that you schedule things to make sure that you get your main classes in, before the other classes. You know, you don't need to run a show where if late models are your top class, they don't need to be your last feature running that night. I think if anything, do kind of what the Lucas Oil Late Model Series has done at some of their events where they'll get their portion of the show finished up in, two and a half hours. Then after the Lucas feature, they'll even start running heat races for some of the support classes.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that came up multiple times again was run your main class first. And there was somewhere in the thread buried that Tyler County apparently before had a rule that the late model feature would be guaranteed on the track by at least 9:30. And no matter where they were in the program, at 9:30, they would stop and the late model feature would roll off. And I don't know if that's true. I don't recall ever hearing that before, but something like that could really help entice people to come to these local shows if they know they're going to see the main event at a decent time. And then if it's a racing night and they're feeling spry and they know that the track's in good shape, maybe they stick around for some of the support classes like the modifieds or a limited late model or a crate late model.
Yes, I think those are genius ideas. I think that's what exactly needs to be done. I think keeping the crowd in all night long waiting to see their late model feature or their sprint feature, I think that's a poor business practice, because when you do that, I think all you do is just get people aggravated and yeah, they may be stuck in the stands, but they're not paying attention to that support class race for the most part. They're just hoping there's not a lot of wrecks so they can get it over with fast. So yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely how you find the right balance with that. And you know, I know if you do that, you're going to have some of your support class guys saying, hey, that's not fair that I've got to wait to, to get on track like that. But I think that's just where they have to realize that that's just where the sport is. I mean, this is a business, and I think it's a lot better to be running later in the night than to have your track shut down and not be able to run at all.
And yeah, I agree absolutely. And there's a lot of tracks that's unfortunately no longer running because there's not the car count and the fan enthusiasm that there once was. And the folks that are surviving are the ones that are being able to balance, having the amenities for the fans and being efficient in their shows and keeping their drivers happy. But I think you probably have to keep your fans happy, number one, and then you've got to be able to, on the backside, go to your drivers and help them understand why things kind of are being run the way they are so that they have a place to come race. And there's a lot of misnomers between, some guys in the pits that think the promoter's making off like a bandit and making a lot of money off some of these shows. And then there's a misnomer on the stand side that if it's you're running late one night, it's because the promoter's wanting to keep you there to sell hot dogs.
Yes, and neither one of those things are true. That's always a notion that you hear is, oh, they're just trying to keep me here, so they can sell concession stands. But what they don't realize is the longer that you're there, that's the more you got to pay your you got to pay your sheriff's deputies to be there. You more you got to pay your pay your squad that's there. That's the more you got to pay on your light bill, and those things aren't cheap. So. It's kind of one of those deals that what little bits you may make on having people there longer worth of concessions, you're going to lose it on everything else.
I think the last thing that I want to, for sure, really ask you instead of kind of throw out there as a way to improve, but there's a lot of people that will say, why don't you just pay more? If you pay a good purse, they will come. And what's been your experience with that, TJ?
That is absolutely the furthest thing from the truth. If you pay more, they will come. I've had it to where we have had shows at Southern that have paid big money, and that some of the times that ends up being our lowest car count of the night. We could have a 5,000 win late model race, and a track a couple hours away could have their regular 1,200 to win show and have more late models than us. And it's worked out vice versa that we've had a regular 1,500 to win show, and we draw more cars than the track up the road paying 3,000 to win. It's just, for some reason that mantra does, has never worked. We've in my time of doing it, and you're talking, 10 years or so of this, we've done every type of purse that you could think about doing on a weekly level. We've had some of the highest purses in the country for late models. That's the way Southern Ohio is, at the 2,000 to win. There's nobody in the country that's paying that much to win for late models, but that's what all of us were doing at one time. And you know what? It didn't make any difference in the car count paying that or paying the 1,200 to win. So, if it was that simple, just paying more money to get the cars and then to get the people, we would all be, upping our purses up. But it's just such a tight margin, with these racetracks. It's just, it's a very, very tough business to make it work financial wise, and sadly that's why you see so many come and go so fast in the sport.
Yeah, and I've seen it myself as a fan. I'll look for some of these bigger paying races to go to, be it late models or modifieds, because I like to see a good modified show occasionally with, when there's good drivers and a good purse. But I'll get to the track kind of expecting a certain car count within reason, and it'll turn out that there were more cars there the week before for their regular purse. And it's confusing at times, and it almost seems like some of the guys are afraid of money.
That's what it is what happens with it is, a lot of your teams that are lower funded, when they see those big purses, they think, oh man, there's gonna be 30 cars here. I'm not even gonna have a shot at making the show, so I'm gonna walk away, with $50 or $100 in B-May money. Whereas, hey, I can go down the road and I'm guaranteed 150, $200 a start. So hey, that's where I'm gonna go. So that's definitely what happens on those type of situations.
It does sound like that we agree that the promoters and the track, or the promoters and the drivers, crews, that we need to work together as a team. Fans probably need to not, moan and groan so much when there's an off night, especially if the track has a good history of putting on a good show in a timely manner. and worked together to tighten the schedule for a night. And it sounds like that's what all of us mostly agree on, is if we could tighten up the schedule throughout the night, we could draw in more new people.
Here's the last thought that I've got on it that I think is something that tracks need to maximize, and that is to try to promote these drivers and race teams. You know, as a track promoter, that is your job to do that. You know, with your social media, you know, do videos, do interviews with the drivers. You know, make posts about them. You know, with pictures of their cars, and you know, make posts talking about your drivers. You know, have opportunities to do a meet the drivers night to where, you know, the fans get to meet the drivers. Do a deal where after the features, the pits are open for the fans to come in and get an up close experience with the cars and drivers. I think that is so huge right now, because that's what people are about. I think is the personalities, and at each local short track across the United States, they've got some of the best personalities in the, you know, in the whole motorsports business there. So I think that's something that we need to do. And from my experience of anything that I've done with that, the driver support at 120%.
That's a very insightful thought. You know, that brings up to me, I remember hearing commercials on the radio for an upcoming race at a certain local track, and you would see pictures of late models in grocery stores, and you might see a little article in the paper, and even the local news channel might have a short little snippet about Rocky Top or Southern Ohio or some racetrack. And I think maybe some of the promoters are getting maybe a little lazy, thinking that social media will do all of their job for them.
Yeah, you know, with the social media, I mean, it does a lot. It's a great way to reach a lot of people, to reach a targeted audience, and not have to spend a whole lot of money. It works great, but it should be everything that you do. I know the last year out at Southern, you know, we made the driver hero cards for our track champions from the previous year. That's something that we paid for and got made up, and we handed them to every fan that came through the gate. And that's just a way to, you know, to get people to get to know these drivers. And said, I think there's just a whole lot of value in doing that.
Absolutely. Anything that you can do to promote your drivers, I think is going to be a big win, not just now, but for generations to come, to get those kids, you know, enamored with these superstars who are absolutely willing to take time out to chat with them or sign an autograph or what have you. And that means so much. And, I think that about wraps it up, DJ.
Yeah, that's a lot of good things to, you know, for people to think about there. And one thing I will say, just to close on my part, is, you know, with the track promoter, you've got so much stuff, so many moving, you know, targets that you're in control of. I think, you know, maybe the best thing to do for some of these tracks is, you know what, just, you know, find somebody that knows something about marketing, that's a race fan, and, you know, you could probably find somebody that would do it for probably next to nothing, and you know what, just hire them to be in charge of making that better fan experience. And that's something that I wish we would have done, because, you know, we were all spread so thin on just trying to keep everything else running. It really didn't leave a whole lot of, you know, resources to, to be able to really focus on that stuff. Whereas, you know, if we would have had somebody that we could have hired just to be in charge of that I think it could have made a big difference.
There is certainly a lot to digest there. And I tell you what, I've really enjoyed this kind of look at the other side that a lot of people, you know, either don't have the opportunity to hear, or maybe some of the times they just don't want to hear it.
Yep. And, you know, I mean, everything I've said is the truth. I mean, I've talked about, you know, things that, that I wish I would have done, and, you know, things that were maybe some of my shortcomings with it. But I just think those things are facts.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up here. We appreciate you listening to this edition of the Four Wide Salute. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Guys, like, subscribe, listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast. Check us out on Twitter @4Wide_Salute, and check us out on Facebook. Until next time, guys.